This is GeekSpeak, episode 28 of season 16. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm Lyle Troxell, and with me in the studio is Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie. Hey, Miles.
How's it going?
Quite well, thank you. Sir, please tell me about the moon, would you?
Well, it's big. It's made of cheese.
And we visited it once.
And we've sent people there. Yeah.
And we really have sent people there.
I'm not even going to justify it. Okay, actually, as a segue, flat earthers out there, what I want you to do, personal experiment.
Listening to the show, dude.
Whatever. This is for the audience to share with their friends. This is viral.
Okay.
You place a stick into the ground, and then you measure what the shadow is at exactly 12 noon.
Okay.
Then I want you to go either north or south. Go visit a relative. You know, like head 200 miles, 300 miles, and then do the exact same experiment within a couple of days in that new location.
At the same time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you'll be
are the shadows the same length? If they are, the world is flat. If they're not, by the way, you have to use this with flat level ground.
Okay, wait a second. You're assuming that the sun is far away, but in the flat Earth concept, the sun is like really close and a lot smaller.
Yeah, see, that's dumb.
Yeah, no, it's great. Okay, but we know that like, that's...
There's suddenly this like little spinning whirly gig going through the sky.
Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong stepped on another planet, looked back, and saw that it was round.
They did not step on another planet.
Another celestial body. Is that good enough?
Yeah, okay.
And so we know that. And how did they get there? We know that it was a rocket and all that, but there's actually a lot of software involved, yes?
Yes, great deal. Huge amount, in fact. A lot of it assembly language, if not machine language. And, well, they've open sourced it. They've put it up on GitHub. Anyone can take a look at all that code that was written in the 1960s. And
all the code that actually did control the flight and the orbiter, mm-hmm. like all the flight data.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the most wonderful shots of this little story that's available on QZ.com, Quartz, and we'll have it up on GeekSpeak, is a picture of Margaret Hamilton, who's the director of software engineering at the time, standing next to a printed version of the assembly code. They printed it out in paper because that's a stable way of doing it, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, for a long time, that's what they had was paper versions. They had to scan them in and hand type them, and that's why we actually have copies of them at this point, I think.
And it turns out when they were trying to send the information back and forth, some of it got munched up, mm-hmm. so an engineer had to go in and try to recreate the code, and luckily it actually worked after that. But
So anyway, Margaret standing, Hamilton, director of software engineering, in 1960s, is standing next to a printout of the code. The printout stacked volumes are as tall as she is. Mm-hmm. It's an amazingly large stack of code. And have you looked at the repo yet?
I have not.
Repo is for repository, of course. It's available now for everybody to view easily.
I did, however, hear about some of the GitHub issues that were opened on that project.
Because mm-hmm, they did provide it on GitHub.
Yes. One of them being the effects of stirring a cryogenic tank under certain circumstances with faulty equipment, how it could lead to an explosion.
That was in the document? That was in source code?
That was in one of the GitHub issues, at which point someone responded,
"That's messed up.
Fixed in Apollo 14.
Oh, God. That's so wrong.
I thought it was quite clever.
It's great. So here's the intro to it on the readme. The original Apollo 11 guidance computer, AGC source code, converted from their custom .AGC files to .S files for syntax highlighting for command module Comanche 055 and lunar module Lumarini 099, digitized by folks at Virtual AGC and MIT Museum. The goal is to be an open repo for the original Apollo 11 source code. As such, PRs, that's pull requests, are welcome for any issues identified between the transcriptions in this repository and the original source scans for Lumarity 099 and Comanche 055, as well as any files I have missed. So basically, we're not fixing this code. It's not like a living code to keep on working on. It's really just to make sure there's actual history of the code, which is different than most GitHub repos.
Mm-hmm. There's also wonderful comments like, Does it happen only when the translunar coast Sol 3A or a moon coasting? It may be a problem with the moon, just to narrow down the issue. Common thing is to be able to say, let's make sure that we know which thing is the problem. You take away variables until you run into like the base set. Uh-huh. And so it's a nice, curious thing to say. The problem may be with the moon. For example, have you tried turning the moon on and off again?
So what I love about the source code is, of course, it's not the assembly language. The assembly language itself is actually pretty hard to grok. You can see like variable declarations and where they're storing constants and stuff is totally easy to understand. But other than that, you really have to know the assembly that they're using, and no one does really. I mean, if you do, you're probably perusing it and enjoying it. But the comments in the source code are actually really interesting. It's the comments and the write-up and who wrote it, and all of that, of course, is in very much like a legal document. It looks like a lot. Yeah.
Bear in mind that even the most simple C program, let's say it's like 25 lines long, is a very large document in assembly language.
That is true. That's a good point.
The fact that this printed out to be huge reams of paper, if it were rewritten, if you know somehow we had a way back time machine and the space race wasn't done on computers that are 1/1,000,000th the speed of our iPhones, and it was redone in C,
yeah,
that code base would not reach to the height of that director.
It would probably be one book.
And
that's because, of course, C is a higher level language, right? It's a more abstract way of talking about computer code,
right?
And that's actually,
and don't get me started with Python.
It would be this, well, okay, it'd be a little different.
But Perl would be one to, line.
a regular expression. land ship. No one could ever read it, though. Oh, jeez. But
that was for all the programmer geeks out there. You're all laughing like crazy, or you're groaning. Everyone else is going.
Everyone's groaning.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody else is groaning too. So, of course, they did have to write it manually. They didn't have an upper level language they were able to do that in, right? They did actually write it by hand, if you will. So line by line, and there's a lot of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing we have a more complicated, higher level. What do you call a language like C compared to assembly or Python compared to C?
Well, C, as it's originally proposed, is basically portable assembly.
Right.
The compilers nowadays are at the point where it's at a reasonable or better.
But how do I how do you specify that linear line of assembly, C, Python, if you will? How do you say, like, it's not more complex, it's a higher level language is where I would say it. Yeah, it's a higher level language.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, okay. You start from circuits to machine language to...
All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Facebook then, shall we?
Sure. So, wait, we're talking about Facebook?
Well, you have a story in here that talks about Facebook, so I decided to do that.
Oh, right. I do have a story that's about Facebook.
It's actually a comment. Brian texted in a photograph of some of the source code and line 179 of some of the files. TC, which I'm assuming, what's TC for assembly?
TC. It's processor dependent.
Yeah, who knows what
it really is.
Bank call, and it says temporary. I hope. Next line says the same comment. So clearly they're not exactly sure. It's like any source code, basically.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of to do, fix this.
Yeah.
Or is this correct?
Facebook vows only to delete.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. There
was an issue recently with the shooting of a black man by a police officer. The other one, not the one you're thinking of.
Dude.
Where he was in his car, he had a weapon in the car, he had a license for concealed carry, and
sure,
it's legal in Minnesota. And he, according to his girlfriend, reached for his license and registration, and the police officer assumed he was reaching for a weapon and shot him.
Right.
And thus the uproar.
And he also said he declared that he had the weapon, or she said that he did.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Which is what you're supposed to do. That's what everyone says. Even Sean Hannity is saying, you tell the officer that pulled you over, hey, I have a weapon and I have a license for it.
Philando Castile is.
Yes.
Yeah. Or Castile.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the girlfriend actually put that video up on the internet, streamed it live to Facebook, which I do have to say, I thought that was a brilliant notion. It's something that can't be just taken down. It's not something that someone can confiscate your phone after the fact and get rid of the video, which would be an issue if you were just recording video on your local device.
So she had the wherewithal to do that prior to any incident, any
No,
I have not watched
the shot. The gunshots happened prior to that, and then she started recording.
Okay.
Yeah, you're in a bad situation. I can't really fault her for doing that, and at the same time, I'm kind of in awe that she was able to do that.
You mean your loved one's shot and killed in front of you, or at least bleeding.
With your 4-year-old child in the seat behind you?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems. But I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
Yeah, but at the same time, you need to have the word get out, and so yeah, back and forth. The video was taken down
by Facebook.
Yes, as it was of graphic nature. I completely agree with this. In fact, it was a reason why recently I deleted my Facebook app off of my phone, because I was basically seeing what amounted to black snuff films. On my feed, and I was having some mental difficulty with this.
I was doing a scroll past quickly because of I definitely get impacted by that kind of thing too.
When you have a video,
and it's funny that you did the same thing. I deleted Facebook today. I just was like, you know what? And it was also battery usage and such. But it's just in a situation where I don't need to know that there is
police brutality. I don't need to. I mean. I don't need to learn that.
You don't need to learn that. You need to know that.
Right.
As an American,
yes,
you need to know
yes.
that.
And it's different when it's posted as a video and like it says what the video is about and you click on it and then you choose to watch it. When it's Facebook has a thing where the videos just start playing as you scroll through. And so with a lot of people trying to spread the word, which is great, it does lend itself to being a very visually hostile environment. I don't want to go so far as to say traumatic, because these events have not happened to me, but they do, strike close to home. At any rate, Facebook brought them down because they are graphic. Not just that video, but the video of the other black gentleman shot by police recently. And Facebook has now changed their policy, let the video come back up again, and has stated that they will only delete graphic live video if it's used to mock their victims. In other words, if its intent is ridicule, or I guess one way I've heard it talked about in terms of performance is whether you are punching above your class, your weight class, or below it.
Let's say it more like this: like if the video is intention is graphical, but is intention to assist the victim in some way rather than to demean the victim.
Yeah.
Right. So you're not taking advantage of or glorifying any of those things, but there's some other reason to do that.
Right. It is not for the sake of titillation or to minimize the
Because truth sometimes is a very powerful, useful thing to share socially, even when it's hard, and actually sometimes especially when it's hard to witness. Are they moving forward with the idea of graphic content potentially giving you warning, because it'd be very easy for them to say, well, people have been saying this content is graphic and difficult, and therefore we put a shade over it or we don't autoplay it. There's other ways they could engage with the content and still allow you to maybe be in the right mindset to view it
doing it. This is a separate conversation, because they were talking about their terms of service and taking the videos down altogether.
Because
so
that fit
the conversation
terms.
About how they want to filter, if they want to filter, what mechanism they do so is a conversation for the future.
And this is really just about when they decide to take it down and change their policy slightly.
And it also comes to play something I've talked about before with friends and coworkers, and I believe on the show before, which is many of these companies like Facebook or a Google or an Apple or any large company that is on the forefront of something, whether it be technology or some other field, where the law doesn't really apply because you're just inventing the things.
Right. Well, the existing law applies, but there are no laws that cover the instance that you're talking about. Right. It's just not something that makes it – because you always write laws about situations that may occur and such.
Right. Think of 10 years ago. Would it have made sense to say there is a law against mass groups of people recording the police in public doing their – like it just wouldn't – not everyone had a cell phone, and the people that did, they weren't using it for video capture quite often, and it wasn't very high quality. And it
are you saying there's laws right now about against recording?
Some jurisdictions have tried to pass those, yes. Wow. But that's beside the point. It's like saying the technology has to exist first before you can say whether or not you are going to regulate, not regulate, have a constitutional challenge or not. And I do have to say that I think Facebook took an ethical view of this, have been trying to do the right thing. And in addition to that, that there are some folks that shy away from that technological edge or the social edge, mm-hmm. because it does end up leading to a lot of gray areas. Because it hasn't been covered before, then you have to be the one to decide, especially with a profit motive behind you, is this worth doing? Should we be putting restrictions on this, you know, proactively or not? Should we be taking this avenue even though we know it's possible, but it may not be desirable? And that's why people of conscience need to take on these roles, even when they have a moral ambiguity, when they are a gray area, especially because they have a gray area. Because if they are vacated by people who have no moral qualms about something that are governed simply by dollars mm-hmm. or some other motivation, by definition, the folks that occupy that space are going to be the ones that don't care.
Right. So you're glad they're caring, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad that there are people at Facebook who do care. And I actually do appreciate Mark Zuckerberg's stance in a lot of these cases.
Has he said anything about the Castile recording?
I don't know.
Talking about the tenure of his.
I'm talking about in general, but I'm talking about him with regard to like the Black Lives Matter movement, mm-hmm. him talking about just police brutality in general, social inequity. He hasn't always been on the same page as I am. I haven't always agreed with him, but you know, poor him, he's still a billionaire. But at the same time, it's nice to know that someone is wrestling with that as opposed to someone who's fixated on how do I maximize the dollars for Facebook? How do I maximize the number of eyes on Facebook?
Well, you would think that someone that was socially aware, as Zuckerberg is, that corporations of this day and age have to be more than just a money-making machine, it seems to me. That times are changing. I could be wrong, but it feels like Facebook is helping that movement forward.
History is replete with companies that ethics was not a priority, whereas they ended up being quite wealthy and generating great shareholder value. So I believe it is a choice. It is a choice by Facebook. It is a choice by Tim Cook at Apple.
Yeah. To be clear, the ACLU, this is just sent in by Brian. Thanks for helping out with this. ACLU lists 18 states where police can be recorded legally. And they actually offer, the ACLU offers a suggestion of using an app they offer called Mobile Justice California, Mobile Justice Arizona, and so on, that allows you to start streaming anytime you want and the video is off your phone instantaneously. We've covered this before on
Geek Speak. And there are some states where it has fallen under the laws of wiretapping where both parties need to be aware that there is a recording going on.
Of course, that awareness can just be a declaration of such.
Well, the point behind that was, in fact, for people to protect conversations that were in private, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. And once again, 10, 15 years ago, that notion of citizen videographers in a moment's notice – you know, videotaping the actions of government officials was unheard of.
Right, right. Well, so, and that's why the ACLU has actually listed these apps and actually made different ones for different states because they're trying to inform you and show you how to use it and legally abide by that. So if you're in one of the 12 states or 18 states that you can do that in, it'd probably be a good idea to go to ACLU and know what it is.
18 states that you can clearly do it in the other states. It's I am curious to know what would happen with regard to a legal challenge if it went to the Supreme Court.
Sure.
I don't envy the person that has to go through that legal challenge.
Right. Yeah, I know. It does seem like a difficult thing. I think at one point, though, recording it prior to and then finding out later might be the best socially responsible thing to do, even if it's not you can be used for indicting anyone or anything like that. At least there's a factual representation. At least my representation. And of course, ACLU, which is a legal organization, wouldn't be suggesting it in places where it's clearly ambiguous or it's not clear.
And well,
it is
ACLU
ambiguous
is,
because it could be risky for them to be saying,
yeah,
record anywhere, right?
The point behind ACLU is legal representations of legal advice, so it wouldn't make sense for them to make legal advice that does not jive with the law.
Right. And so there's lots of legal qualities about this, and we're going to post some stuff on today's GeekSpeak episode. Of course, today is the 28th episode of season 16, and July 13th, 2016, since I haven't updated the website to clarify episode numbers on the website very easily. Anyway, we'll put some links up about that. Okay, so let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, let's move on to some tech.
Some more tech. Well, Facebook vowing to not delete feed. Oh, by the way, I didn't know that Facebook could do real-time streaming video.
Yeah.
I'm assuming
you've never seen the Facebook Live?
I think I've seen it, but I didn't really pay attention to it. There's so many of those kind of features that,
yeah, it started off with public figures. I was noticing it. And
sure.
Then I saw a couple of friends from high school. But then again, they had public businesses and public facing.
Sure.
And oh, my goodness, the people I went to high school with are famous. And then it started trickling down to people that I know aren't particularly famous, but you know, you're live. You're covering a conspicuous event in your life, and people might want to watch, so you turn it on. And I think that was the initial thought behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it was ever planned for something like a traffic stop.
Yeah,
but so, it's a curious, unintended consequence that I think ended up being beneficial.
Yeah, there's a 2011 case that Brian just posted up. Glick versus Kunfire held that a private citizen has the right to record video and audio of public officials in the public place, and that the arrest of the citizen for wiretapping violation held that was against the First and Fourth Amendment rights of the citizen.
What was the venue?
That's the thing. It's the public space, right? So
No. Oh. The venue of the court.
I'd have to look that up on Wikipedia.
I mean, was it federal court? Was it a state Supreme Court?
Appeals,
was it
First Circuit.
Okay. So circuit court.
Mm-hmm.
So not a Supreme Court decision.
Okay. No. But I don't think it's been fought after that. So in any case, again, we'll have more of that for your reading leisure up at geekspeak.org. Okay. What's up with Samsung?
So you're familiar with a micro SD card?
Man, am I. Not the SD card, but the micro one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The same technology, just smaller.
Smaller. Yeah. I remember when I first saw it, I was impressed with the size of it.
Can you tell us an example of where you'd find micro SD?
In a phone.
Okay.
Yeah, how about that?
I was thinking, I guess cameras tend to be the full SD format because they tend
most
to be
of the
larger.
Time,
yeah.
Yeah, most of the time the cameras do. Like, my Nikon actually has two SD card slots, so you can actually make two copies if you want to make sure,
yeah,
or you can have video on one and so on.
But the floppy disk of the 21st century.
Sure.
Only not very floppy and much,
a lot
much, much larger.
Much smaller and larger.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is about the speed. They aren't really speed demons. I mean, let alone the Retina MacBook Pro that you have in front of you that has a SSD that can do ridiculous speeds.
Oh, yeah, of course. The speed on them is much slower. Sure.
The SSDs in my laptop are an older generation, and they only go up to 500 megabytes per second.
What are SD card speeds?
SD card speeds tend to be measured in the tens of megabytes per second.
Yeah.
So if you get one that is a very high quality and it's you're reading sequentially, all your ducks are in a row, I think they go up to like 100 or no, maybe like 80 megabytes per second, maybe somewhere on the range. Hard drive speeds from about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Well, that's not fast enough.
Of course not.
Right. Especially when I've been playing with my Raspberry Pi, and I'm like, come on, boot already. It's not all the CPU's fault on that. It's also the I.O. speed.
The SD card that I use on my Nikon, because you want the highest speed possible when you're writing photos down, especially mm-hmm. when you're doing raw photos, because the camera has some RAM in it. So you can take lots of shots, but at some point, it's got to get those onto disk before it runs out of space.
The RAM is used as a buffer.
Yeah. So my camera, which can fire quite quickly, I use like SanDisk Extreme cards, if you will, and they claim a 45 megabits per second transfer rate.
Megabyte, sorry.
Yeah,
storage.
Megabyte, yeah.
And many times they're referred to as like class 10.
Right.
You know, class 6.
Class 10.
Class 4 is, it may go faster, but we're guaranteeing that you'll go at least 4 megabytes per second.
Okay, yeah.
Class 10, it may go faster, but we're guaranteeing that you're going to go at least 10 megabytes per second in both directions.
Sure.
And UCS 1, I believe, is the newer ones that goes, it's faster.
Okay.
Now Samsung is releasing a new type of storage. So internally it's different, but externally it's the same.
You know,
called
what?
UFS.
Here's the one I'm using. I'm sorry. I misspoke. UHS 1 or U3. And this is the one I'm using. It's black. That's right. The case is black on it. It's 95 megabytes per second. Okay. So that's pretty fast still.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I was thinking of. That's the higher
that's
range.
The extreme. Yeah. The
that's
SanDisk
if you,
Extreme
if you
Pro,
pay the extra money. Yeah.
Which is UHS 1. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're not paying top dollar for them.
I mean, we're talking about the prices on this. This is like $24 for 32 gigs when they go faster. And then the cheaper one is $20. I mean,
No, you can get the cheaper ones for much less than that.
But I'm saying like half the speed is the one I first read is $20. And I mean, these things are pretty inexpensive for what they are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how much did a floppy disk cost back in the day? And it was 1.44 megabytes.
And it took an hour to fill it.
All right. Anyway. So, UFS is the new storage technology that Samsung was introducing. These are the same physical dimensions as microSD, and UFS stands for Universal Flash Storage. And they're starting off capacities between 32 gigabytes and 256 gigabytes, and they're maxing out at, or at least theoretically, we don't have them yet, to being 500 megabytes per second. So the equivalent speeds of which you would get in an
SSD,
slightly older generation.
Your speed SSD.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
a SATA
amazing.
3 interface. Yeah.
But it's SATA 3 interface. So it's a completely different interface.
No. I mean, the equivalent of a SATA 3 interface
For the SD card reading and writing? I mean, this is a two-way street. You've got to have the media be able to do this, and you also have to have the reader-writer be able to do this.
Right. The reader-writers should be able to do this. The media should be able to do it, but chances are you're not going to get a maximum of the speed right away.
Right.
And reading speed will almost certainly be faster than writing speed.
So are you saying this is going to happen relatively soon?
Oh, yes.
Wow. Are they available?
No.
Damn it.
But you are talking about instead of being twice as fast, or like we were talking about between those two cards where the speeds got a little bit faster. Now we're talking about anywhere from 5 to 20 times faster.
Wow.
So a big jump, a big leap forward, and I can't wait for it to show up on a Raspberry Pi.
You could get a
Because there you're getting into speeds that you're describing for, having as a real network-attached storage device.
Right.
Which before you really couldn't do on a USB 2.0 hub.
Right. Well, thank you for that. I want to talk about Pokemon Go.
Sure.
I'm feeling that there's going to be people rolling their eyes because there's so much coverage of this right now. But first, I want to let you know that GeekSpeak is independent now, and we're running by the love and generosity of 15 patrons that are up at patreon.com/geekspeak. You can find out more from geekspeak.org/support if you want to participate. And of course, spreading the word would be great. If you have people that might enjoy the show, please do spread the word. We'd love that support.
We are now Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go, go, go! Have you played Pokemon Go?
No.
You suck. No, I had played earlier today for the first time. I actually had people, I work on an interactive group at Netflix. So I actually work on UIs for interactive content. It's kind of a new thing we're exploring. I don't think I've talked about it on the show because it's been kind of private, but we've launched a couple titles and have a little bit of that going out there, so I can speak freely a little bit about it. In any case, the people that I work together, of course, are very interested in interactive content, and this being a very much an interactive piece. Let me explain what Pokemon Go is. You probably already know this, right, Miles? Do you know what it is?
In theory.
Okay. Augmented reality is the idea of, instead of virtual reality, where virtual reality is complete consumption of the environment and your senses so that you're in a secondary space, augmented reality is the place of being where you augment the current reality and overlay things.
You're staring at your phone while it's taking video of your, or showing an image of what's in front of you and overlaying images on top of that so that you are still likely to bump into people.
Yes. And Phoenix Taos is a friend of mine who used to did the digital arts program. I think he's been on the show a couple times. And also Jacob Garby both did their research projects in augmented reality work along with a few other students. But the work they were doing in 2011, I think it was when Jacob actually graduated from the digital arts new media program, was exactly the kind of thing that Pokemon is doing now in large form. And this is not new in a large form game. Basically, what we're talking about is you take the physical location of where you are and you overlay location, geolocation points in the physical map, and then you allow to see those locations through your phone's camera. So you superimpose a game onto the physical world and you augment the physical world. Well, Ingress I've played. It's kind of fun to play in a town environment. Ingress was very geeky and technical. It started on Android first. Google bought it. So Alphabet owns like 33% or something like that of that. Nintendo also owns part of the Pokemon Co., which is the game company that created Pokemon Go. And it's owned basically by Google or Alphabet and by Nintendo as a joint venture to get this game off online. Ingress was really about like capturing waypoints, capture the flag in a virtual space. So you would play and you'd walk around a town. And as you walk around a town, you'd find points that you could try to collect. And you had to put kind of a virtual machines in that environment that slowly drained the energy from that flag. And over once in a while, eventually you'd capture that flag, and the more land you captured and so on. And there was sides of a war, if you will, of capturing land. But it was about walking around, and the people that were playing this were people that were, you know, early adopters in tech, game students in a digital arts program. Pokemon Go, of course, is off of the Pokemon title, comic book, television show, which is styled around collecting these aliens that have landed on the planet. Pikachu is one of the most famous that we probably all know. And you're collecting them in your, what are those little objects called? I don't know what they're called. But the Pokemon sphere, if you will. In any case, in this one, you walk around a physical world, this physical world, finding new locations you've never been before and capturing virtual things in the game. Does that jive with you? Am I making sense?
You're not making sense, but I know what you're talking about.
Screw you, man.
No, it has nothing to do with you.
That's fine.
I am older than what the target audience was for the original Pokemon.
Sure, we both are.
And then I didn't have kids at the time that Pokemon was big.
Right.
And so I'm very much out of the loop with regard to why is Pokemon a thing, other than, you know, inciting epileptic seizures in people. Because there was an episode of Pokemon where that was a lot of flashing. And
yeah, there's always a lot of flashing.
Yeah, so. But no, I guess I did watch a couple of episodes and went, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just the wrong age. Yeah.
You know, it's a fine television show. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's for a certain age kid.
Sure.
You collect different objects. And there was a whole trading card game with this too, an actual plastic game as well. You could collect things. And people have plush toys and such of Pokemon characters. It's a fairly popular trope. Okay?
Yeah.
This game...
Where you... trap sentient creatures in a little ball and use them for your amusement.
And you train them to battle for you. They fight for you after that. They're kind of alien animal slaves.
Right, and the more powerful they get, the higher your rank.
Yes, of course. Because the more you use creatures under your control, the more powerful you are.
Yeah.
Just ask the South.
No, I'm sorry. Sorry about that segue, folks. Sorry.
The thing I found interesting about this game, first off, that it has over 44,000 reviews on iOS. It is the top rated paid income game on iOS, and it got that way in 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It has hundreds of, if not millions of people playing the game already. Its rate of growth should surpass Twitter in active usage every day, or already has. it's already surpassed Tinder in usage. This game is massive. If you're not playing yourself, you know someone is.
It's more interesting to people than sex.
That's right. That's basically what is going on. So one of my colleagues, who is a serious programmer, I mean, it's not uncommon for him to ask for a pull request review at 3 a.m. in the morning and be at work at 10, right? Like, he is programming all the time. And he's a great guy. I like him a lot as an individual and all of that. He actually played the game for 5 hours this weekend. And the game requires you to be outside and walking around. So he says he's walked. I asked him, I said, have you been outside and walking more in the last, you know, this weekend than you have in the last month? And he like summed it up. He's like, yep, more exercise in this weekend playing this game than the last month. People are, their Fitbit scores are going up because, mm-hmm. And of course, that's what he tells me, the Fitbit score is going up. I love that he says that. He doesn't say he's healthier, he's exercised. He said that his Fitbit score, which is another type of game, has gone up. So I find it.
Hey, whatever it takes, man.
So also my colleagues in general just are like, we got to play this game, and we're doing an event this week to play it. But I decided to go ahead and install it since Dee Dee and Chandler, our younger geeks involved in the GeekSpeak program, were like, you got to know about this game. So I installed it, and I logged in through my Google account, my personal Google account. And the authentication mechanism is all through an iOS app. The one I used was through an iOS app. And you know the OAuth 2 pattern for Google, right? The authentication mm-hmm. pattern where you can log
it's
things in.
A federated login so that individual sites don't need to
have
keep track of passwords and how to log in. You just farm out to Google, and Google then sends you a token saying, yep, they're the person who they say they are.
Yeah. The general idea would be this is I don't have to trust Miles. Miles can make an app. He gives me a prompt. When I click on it, it sends me over to Google. Google says, hey, Miles wants to get access to this information from your account, normally your authentication of who you are. Are you cool with that? And I say yes. And of course, when I'm over at Google, I log in. And then when I say yes, it gets sent back to you and says, yep, Lyle's cool with it, and this is who he is. So in no time did you have my password, and that's great. In an iOS environment where you have a native environment app, you have to do a lot more trust because, first off, you have to trust that form, there's no URL in the browser, right? So you have to trust mm-hmm. that form is being served by Google. I did trust that because Nintendo's a large corporation. Also, it's partially owned by Google, so you'd think they're doing it correctly. But the normal step that happens when you authenticate through the system is it says what rights that the app wants. When I was making Google Glass app, all I needed was contact information. I just needed an email address. I don't need to be able to access your contacts or know who your friends are, or your location information, or access to all your Google Drive data. I don't need all that. But for different apps, you need different rights, right? It makes sense to have an app that has access to your Google Drive if you want to edit spreadsheets in Google Drive, right? Mm-hmm. So all of these access controls are part of the API. And I researched this a lot when I was doing Google Glass apps. And I love that pattern. But when you have a native app, you theoretically can just answer the question for them because you never actually go to Google. You're kind of sending this through Google, and Google sends it back. This app is actually asking for full rights to your Google account. No restriction access, which means that they could theoretically delete all your photos if they wanted to. Not the best rights example and suggestion, and they kind of blew it on this.
And it's not like, or at least I don't believe that Nintendo would ever want to delete all the photos off your,
of course not.
Or off your account or do anything nefarious with your Google account per se. But even if I am the least cynical, even if I say they're trying to make their coding easier. Mm-hmm. It does mean that the same group that thought, well, we're going to make this coding easier for ourselves and we're going to do this thing that's sloppy could also tend to do something else that was sloppy with their coding and mm-hmm. therefore delete something of yours or use your account in a way that you do not like or was not intended because they were being lazy and sloppy.
Right. It represents their lack of responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay. To counter that, I didn't have time to actually confirm this by making a Google app and getting authents and stuff. When you ask for limited access with a Google authentication system, you have to clarify the access you need. When you ask for full access, you might not need to clarify, which means the pattern for asking for full access might be less hurdles for an individual user.
And fewer.
I love you. I'm going to hurt you now, but I love you. Exactly. Fewer hurdles for the individual. And of course, as a UI engineer, I understand that every time you put a hurdle up, you're going to have a problem. They should change this access now. Like, it's not appropriate. I thought about making a Google account so that I could sign up for the game, but actually halfway through the day when I did it the second time to see what the process was, if it really ever warned me there was full access, I couldn't actually access the game. And in fact, that's the problem at this point. They had no idea this game would scale at this level. They had no idea they'd have millions of users within the first week.
And if it is in fact the case that it's more straightforward to get a Google federated login with full access rather than a subset of access or basic access means that there's something that Google needs to fix.
Absolutely. And I mean, the OAuth and everything all worked, right? They're definitely, they're doing two-factor authentication because my account has that on. So from one perspective, they're doing that. And the other side, Google has a few different ways of signing in. You can use Google Plus mechanisms, and those are the ones that actually have more declarative statements about what you can use. And then you have what you would use to log into Chrome, for example.
Sure.
And when you log into, you know, your Chrome browser, you want it to be able to do everything with your Google account because it's kind of representing you. So it definitely makes sense that there would be different sets. But I agree that there should be a very easy to say, I just need an authenticated person. That's all. And an email address. And I shouldn't have to, that shouldn't be more complicated than get a full access to the account.
Yeah, or for that matter, I was thinking if it's basic access, if it really is just your name, your email, and
that's it.
If you're logged in or not, then that should be even simpler.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm assuming they'll fix this. Now, at the time, the developers that are working on this game are not working on that problem right now because they're working on scale problems. They just can't keep the systems off. I did work the game before I knew about the authentication problem and just the over greediness of access to my Google account. I went ahead and played the game just to start it, you know, and used it in the building. And the first time it starts, the virtual, you're collecting these creatures. And when you, these monsters, if you will, and when you capture them, you have to actually go to them.
These Pokemon.
So when you first start the game, one of these Pokemon are very close to you. A very common Pokemon is close to you. And you capture it by throwing this cube, this sphere around it. So you put it in the sphere. And then from there on out, you have to walk around. One of the types of places that you walk to is a gym where you can train. Because as you make your Pokemon character stronger and more powerful, it's more effective at doing battle and capturing other Pokemon. These gyms are at specific locations, and you have to have certain levels of access. It's a very complicated game in some sense. At the same time, it leads you well through it pretty easily, and you have to travel, which is kind of cool to have to travel. So there's a couple great examples of side effects from this game that are not so great. There were two criminals that decided that they would make a collection point in a certain location, have people come into that location, and then rob them. Mm-hmm. They were captured and prosecuted. There is an example of a poor gentleman by who basically had his house be a gym where basically people want to come up to his house and stand in the street and use his virtual house, if you will, his geolocation for things. So people are kind of creepily hanging outside his house. Now, he knew about the game, so he's not that creeped out, but it's a little annoying. People are blocking his driveway and things of that nature.
It does have people there was a story of a gentleman who 3 a.m. he starts doing Pokemon, walks around outside, walks past this gentleman is an older white man, and he goes through a neighborhood, and there are a bunch of African American men, you know, outside, and he just walks right past them, and someone who, and in a neighborhood he might think twice about, but he wasn't thinking about it. He was just thinking about the game, at which point the black gentleman started talking with him, and he started talking and having a good old time. And it involved an onyx, a type of antelope or goat. But at any rate, that's a side point.
Are you talking about the Pokemon he was collecting?
No, I'm talking about they actually had an onyx. But
do you bring in farm animals to every episode of Geek Speak? It used to be not the case, and now you're all of a sudden
farming. So a cop comes by. It's like 3 a.m. There's a bunch of black guys and there's a white guy. And the immediate assumption that cop had was, well, this is a drug deal. And so he stops and queries them about it. It turns out the black guys were also Pokemon fans, and they were at Pokemon Go, and they were
everybody's talking about Pokemon Go pretty quick.
So they finally convinced the cop of what's going on with it. And then the cop goes, huh, what's that? And the cop signs up to do Pokemon Go, gets it, downloads the app and starts doing it. And so it's a curious it was a curious intersection, that little anecdote that went on. I was like,
so when I was working with Jacob and Phoenix and at UCSC and a few other students that were doing this kind of augmented reality, it was very clear that the tech was right on the borderline of being functional. Like, we had to get the newest iPad to make these things work. Geolocation was tricky in some locations. You had to have cell coverage to get enough of it. The processor was having trouble keeping up with locking the imagery. Because one of the troubles with augmented reality like this is that you want to make the object that you place in the video stick to the video. So as you move your phone, it looks like the object's on the ground, not on the screen, or it's just an overlay. And doing that requires some processing power. Apple and Google have been getting better and better at having their devices and their OS support that locking gyroscopic locking. Yeah. Which is still tricky to do, but it's getting easier and easier to do. So there's that aspect of it. But the thing I found so fascinating is that finally, tech was taking us into exploration of our world. I interviewed some people that are doing the mobile warrior. I can't recall now what her name is. Oh, I'm totally blanking. An episode of Geek Speak where we talked to someone who was making travel guides on the phone, right? So it's the idea is the tech is helping you to explore the world more. This thing is kind of dangerously doing that. People are not paying attention to where they're going.
Slipping down into ditches, having to go in the ER because they 30 minutes after they get the app, they're not looking at where they're going.
Yeah.
Or they think they are, but they're being distracted.
So I launched and signed up to the app twice today. The first time I signed up, it did say, pay attention to where you are. The second time I signed up, a few hours later, the imagery on the screen was like a picture of a dragon eating you and like warning, careful where you pay attention to your space.
But if you have a lot more people wandering around, you also end up with people like a woman in Wyoming where the game led her to a dead body floating in the river.
Right. She just happened to be out and about. Yeah.
Right. And it wasn't the game that caused this. It's just that the game caused her to be out and about.
There were a million people sitting in front of their computers looking at Facebook. Exactly. And now there's a million people walking around the streets. They don't do that very often.
Right.
I bet there's a lot more reportings this evening of strange things in the sky called stars that people don't normally look at because they're out in the world doing things they're not normally doing.
There's one screenshot where a man is capturing a Pokemon while his wife gives birth. We'll see if they're still married soon after.
Was the Pokemon a small, fleshy human?
There's a person who was driving down the road and Pokemon Go was prompting that there were Pokemons to be grabbed. So on the highway, he stops, puts his car into park, and starts on the highway trying to grab these things, cause an accident.
Was anybody hurt?
Yes, there were people hurt. Yeah. In the cars behind him. He was not, however.
It's interesting because, of course, this game, if it was mildly successful, would be a lesson learned and they'd fix these problems and address issues like having a waypoint that everybody goes to be private property. They'd make it all public space, right? Like there'd be learnings. But when you have a million people sign up and start using it within a few days, you just can't.
That's the funny thing, though, is if you only have a couple of people and then something like that happens where someone dies, that's generally the publicity. Like,
right.
No one's doing it, but it's something that can kill people.
Right.
Okay, we're not going to do it anymore. Here, when you have that critical mass, you have that huge number of people already doing it, and then it just adds to notoriety. Look at all of these things that are happening associated with it. It becomes just more free PR.
By the way they chose waypoints and then chose the game's structure was off of Ingress. So it's the same group that's made, the same development companies made both the games. And so they used the Ingress database, which was crowdsourced by people making these waypoints. And then they used those waypoints in the Pokemon game, which is very clever because if you have a lot of success around waypoints and there's lots of people playing for them, you know that that waypoint is easy for people to get to, even if it is generated by all the players. Mm-hmm. If you had a game where people randomly picked them, all of a sudden in the middle of some 20 acres of land that you can't get to because of barbed wire fence, there's some waypoint, that's not really going to be very functional and actually kind of dangerous. And in fact, some of these waypoints in Ingress were farther away than you need for playing the Pokemon game. So the range was different. So in the Pokemon game, it seems like you have to get closer to the waypoint than you did in the Ingress game, which is causing people to jump fences and cause and break laws. And probably in some environments, bad things happening because, of course, if you jump into some people's yards in the United States, it's not always a good thing. Are we done with that topic?
I believe so.
Did you want to talk about anything about? Are you excited about augmented reality?
That's like saying, am I excited about television? It's just such. Yes, there's going to be some great things. Like out of television, you're going to have things like my childhood memories of Sesame Street, and I'm going to have. You know, things like that PBS show Space Time. But you're also going to have reality TV shows and you're also going to have Honey Boo Boo. And so
are you saying these are bad things?
What I'm saying is that augmented reality is the medium. Mm-hmm. So to say, am I excited about it? Well, I'm excited about what's going to be done with it or not done with it. Like it's just the medium.
Right. Okay, one last thing. The Pokemon success, investors have jumped into Nintendo. Their stock was up earlier this year as they released some features, some games, I believe. And now it's up $9 billion in market value within a week, which is good for Nintendo. And speaking of childhood, you know, warm fuzzies, I definitely have a warm fuzzy for Nintendo and some of their games. All right, moving on. Let's see.
Anyway.
So what's Putin doing?
Vladimir Putin,
yeah,
the head of the Russian Federation, is literally breaking the internet. Is the headline from Gawker.com.
Okay.
There is a group within Russia, which is the Federal Security Service, which once you translate into Russian and change Cyrillic letters to English letters and then make into an acronym, it's the FSB.
FSB?
Yeah. has been ordered by Putin to produce all encryption keys capable of decrypting all data on the internet. Not really sure what that means exactly.
How long do they have time to do this?
But they have 2 weeks to get that done.
It's like going, now, I need a magic spell.
Now, if this were just some you know, congressperson in the U.S., I would think, or if it was President Obama, I would dismiss and go like, wow, that's really ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. But because it's Putin and because of his history, it would not surprise me if, to satisfy him, FSB goes in and starts trying to co-op ISPs, or well, rather CAs.
It's not hard for them to do that already. I mean, okay, so a CA is a certificate authority. And mm-hmm. when we talk about SSL certificates or HTTPS certificates or CLA, sorry, what are they really? They're not SSL. They're...
Sorry, I don't know. What
SSL
you're going
certificates
for.
Are not really SSL anymore. The protocol is
TLS.
TLS, thank you.
Transport Layer Security.
Yeah. So the whole idea of, you know, I want to trust Miles, so Miles gives me a certificate affirming that he's him, and he encrypts all his communication with me. I look at that certificate, and I have another thing that I trust that is signed his certificate. Then I can trust him because of that trust chain. That trust chain is based off of CAs, and there's a lot of them out there. And governments almost always have the authority.
Yeah, we've
to
used
do
the
this.
Metaphor before, but it's driver's licenses. It's
totally different.
I want to buy some alcohol from Lyle. He needs to make sure that I am who I am, that I can afford it. So here's my driver's license, and it is certified, certificate of authority, by the state of California to say I am who I say I am,
right,
even though the state of California doesn't have a direct involvement with our transaction.
And there are thousands of certificate authorities out there, and thousands that are trusted by your browser. And some of those have the ability to pass off certificate authority to sign other certificates, and those would still be trusted. So the idea at this day and age,
also known as intermediate certificates,
in this day and age, it's extremely hard to manage all of that and trust all of that. Google's actually doing a good job in Chrome browser. So if you use the Chrome browser and Google sees a certificate that has been signed in a way that they don't like, they will warn it and basically cause an error.
Or rather, is signed in a way that they should be liking, but they know for a fact that certificate looks like something else.
They're basically adding a secondary check inside their browser. And so they're catching some of these, but they're not going to catch all of them. And so it's very, I would say it's very easy for the SFB in the Soviet Union to go to CAs and force them, or just have certificate authorities already and start doing this. I mean, we see this in hardware boxes for corporations, where you're inside a corporation and you add a trust certificate to that box, and that box can now inspect all your data. It's useful for spam inspection and such, and also for virus inspection. That's a very common thing for a government, for a corporation to have. And all you have to do is have that same type of box at a larger level and put in a CA cert and generate them on the fly to any domain you go to. So he can totally do this.
Well, it's a question of, I mean, the difference between someone like what we – you and I may be used to in terms of government, mm-hmm. and an autocrat like Putin, is that even though technically, from what you're describing, it's not really tenable, socially he can do things like put phone service providers out of business for noncompliance,
mm-hmm.
or kick companies out of Russia from doing business in the Russian Federation for it. and
it'll make a space where you will have to do business. You'll have to oblige.
Yeah, using it as even more leverage than he already has to shut down any speech that is, you know, not complimentary to his regime.
Yeah, it's definitely concerning.
Yeah,
that's all you got on that. It's scary and bad.
It's scary and bad. Putin wants to break the Russian internet.
This Gawker article, I love one of these bullet points, like the problems emerging about it. All this could cost between $30 and $77 billion. How do you come up with figures like that? I'm sorry, it's a little ridiculous. Any case,
$1 billion here, $1 billion there. Pretty soon, you're talking about real money.
I just love that it's at $30 billion and $77 billion. It's like you can cap it. I mean, it could affect every aspect of business in the Soviet Union.
Anyway. Mm-hmm.
Scary stuff. Let's go on to something a little lighter, shall we?
Sure.
Let's talk about your fingerprints.
Sure. So, your fingerprint. Aside from any...
Do you mean physical fingerprint, as in my fingers print?
Yes.
Okay. Because it's used metaphorically.
Fun fact, there is no scientific evidence that your fingerprints are actually unique among all 7+ billion inhabitants on the planet.
Because we haven't done that study.
Never actually tested that.
Yeah.
It's just been assumed and then
high probability of uniqueness considering you have 10 of them. And most likely no other person has 10 in the same location.
Yeah,
the same
it's case. Just never been tested and we treat it like an absolute. But that's just as a little bit of trivia.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So the question is, assuming that fingerprints are unique, do you own them?
What? Yes.
Do you own your fingerprint? Really?
Yes. Why wouldn't I? I own my likeness, don't I?
Well, see, there's the thing. Because biometrics comes in play. If you are authenticating by a fingerprint, are you licensing your fingerprint's usage? Or do you not actually own it and it's just part of the thing, part of the authentication
chain? I actually think my mother owns the copyright on my fingerprints. She was the original copyright holder, right? Of course, I didn't generate my fingerprints until after birth, I think. I think they come in later, right, as the skin
dries?
No,
they change over time. I would not say that they come in over time. Fingerprints are harder to read from children because they don't have the same oils that adults do, so they fade faster.
You can also lose your fingerprints over time.
You can also lose them by burning, etching with acid or burning the fingertips. And there are a few people who are born without fingerprints at all.
There are people born without hands. So, but
well, no, and people who have fingers, they just they're that the entire family does not have a fingerprint. They have the wrinkles that generally show up. But
my grandmother doesn't have fingerprints. My sister used to always call her a spy. She's like, she's an FBI agent. okay, so who does own the fingerprint if it's not me, or is it a license? Who owns it?
Well, that's the open question. That's what's actually going to be decided.
And what about the retina and your voice, like, and your face? I mean, all these things are biometric data points that represent you. I would assume that you should have control over them.
So there is a law in Illinois. It's called the Biometric Information Privacy Act, and it's from 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the only laws like it in the U.S., and it sets limits on the ways that companies can handle data such as fingerprints or voice prints or retinal scans.
Okay, so basically it gives some structure for a corporation that has to follow if they deal with that kind of data.
Right.
Okay.
In order to use it, they must obtain, according to the Illinois law, written consent from the customer before using it.
Written consent?
Yes, which implies that the what they call consumer, I just say person, owns their fingerprint. But owning your fingerprint seems like such a odd thing to say.
Wait, I don't think it's an odd thing to say. It totally makes sense. What do you mean you don't? Do you own your hair?
The thing is, the fingerprint is not the physical skin. The fingerprint is the impression left after you've touched something.
Sure.
So do you own your sweat?
Well, if we're in a world where intellectual property has an acronym IP because people talk about it so much with legality and such, right? There's general concepts. If I scribble on a piece of paper, that is a copyright thing by me without even declaring it. That is my copyright. If you try to duplicate that, you're in violation. So, of course, if I touch something with my fingerprint, that's copyrighted.
Do you own your DNA?
What do you mean, do I own my DNA? Are you talking about like you own the intellectual property of the DNA?
Do you own your DNA? That's the thing, though. When you're saying, what do you mean by this? Do you mean by this?
Miles, I'm going to the copyright space here. If I make a mark on a piece of paper, I own it. It's copyrighted. If I take my finger and I make an impression, it's just like that. It's copyrighted. Why isn't it? I mean, it's me making a mark in the world, right?
If you sweat on something.
Depends on the pattern. If it's really pretty, I own that. An interesting idea. So why is this becoming such an issue on this case? Is something happening? I understand that there'd be some concern because the law was written such the way that it kind of showed that ownership exists because you had to sign it over, if you will. And therefore, there was an implied responsibility of ownership.
Last year, a gentleman sued Facebook under this law, arguing that the company violated his privacy because of facial recognition technology that allowed them to automatically tag him in a photo to create that geometric map of his face.
And his claim was because in Illinois, where he lives probably,
yes,
you have to sign over to have a company use your biometric information because you own it. If Facebook did it without him signing it over, they're in violation of that law.
Yes.
Totally makes sense to me. But what did they really create? A mathematical mapping of his face.
Now,
they didn't actually even use his image. They used the mathematics of his face.
Right. There's another aspect to this, which is this is the way that we have computers be able to recognize a person. It's the mechanism we use.
Sure.
But the actual intent, the actual process that's going through, the implementation may vary, but the intent is to do what you and I do on a very regular basis, which is look over and go, hey, that's Lyle. Hey, that's Miles. Hey, that's my wife. Hey, that's my kid.
And there's no way that this law would stop you from understanding that who I was by looking at me, or even potentially looking at my fingerprint once and being able to recognize it later.
It doesn't make any sense to copyright something that is an innate biological construct.
But if you don't even talk about copyright, if you talk about this ownership of private data, it's not even copyright necessarily, right? The Illinois law stands by itself. But there's difference between what you socially engage with in the world and how a corporation can profit from that. That's a very different thing.
But see, there's a thing. Facebook is a social interaction between the people involved.
But even your likeness has been historically protected. If people use your likeness, even if you're not a political figure, you can stop them from doing that, right? That's why we see...
No, actually, if you're a political figure as part of a news gathering, that's one thing.
Not a political figure, as I'm saying, if you're a regular human being without being a political figure, you have the right for privacy, for example. So having a photograph reproduced of you is in violation of your privacy.
Depends upon jurisdiction, but sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why you see sometimes people being blurred out, especially when they might not – when they're being remarked discouragingly. Every time you see people that are obese in the United States in photographs like the obesity epidemic, you always see pictures of people from a distance and their faces are always blurred out, right? Mm-hmm. But then you can see a crowd of people that aren't blurred out,
right.
Maybe the same people, but they're not bringing up a point that might be discouraging and therefore they don't block them out for fear of lawsuit. I went on a tangent there, sorry. So what do you think about this law?
Well, the fact that it only applies to Illinois is... means that
it makes it more interesting.
I don't have to because right. I'm in California.
You're not there.
But at the same time, this is that same area of Facebook is on the forefront of this technology that, I mean, Pandora's box has been opened.
Mm-hmm.
The technology is out there. The mathematics are out there. The know-how is out there. So just putting the genie back in the bottle isn't
that's
a possibility.
Never gonna happen. No.
So the question is, what do we do with it now that it's here? What do we do in terms of a social convention about it? Especially when you have something like Facebook, which unlike every other decision we've had to make socially prior in human history, where they were social conventions of Rome, or there were social conventions of Athens or social conventions
this is global.
Of –
Yeah, that's right.
This very much is – like everyone has to agree on it, but there are different jurisdictions. So when is a biometric scan okay and when isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when the biometric scan is used by a repressive government?
Right.
All of these are things that we need to wrestle with.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a lot of growing pains with regard to it.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's the history of this radio program, at least. You and I talk about a lot of the growing pains regarding technology for quite a while.
So when you ask me, what do I think of this law?
Mm-hmm.
It really is something that, I'll be honest, like I don't know enough to be able to make that choice.
Well,
I can talk about things that I say that's kind of icky to me, but ick factor is not...
Good way to make decisions.
Yeah.
What do you think about your fingerprints? Do you own them? What about your daughter's fingerprints? Do you think she should own them? I mean, what do you feel about ownership with regards
Once again,
to data
this is
of a
whole
person?
Area where I hadn't given much thought to
you
it.
You better figure that out, man. I expect an answer next week.
With regard to fingerprints and my daughter, there was an event at a local park recently where local law enforcement was getting kids to be fingerprinted.
With the recovery if they're kidnapped,
And at the same time, the data says that information that I have provided is far more likely to lead to my child's conviction of a crime as they are older.
Mm-hmm. Assuming that they do a crime?
Right. Well, see, I'm black, so that becomes very fungible. And I don't mean to say that flippantly. I mean
and I don't mean to laugh flippantly.
Law is not morality.
Right.
And
the best thing you can do in a situation regarding law is protect yourself. That's why we have some of these rights like remain silent and have representation.
Right.
Because there's a balance there and a fight there, if you will, that occurs immediately.
And that balance with, well, what if she is kidnapped? And then realizing that child kidnapping rates have been going down steadily and constantly since the 70s.
Yeah.
And even though hysteria about child kidnapping has grown tremendously and now we, huddle our kids.
All the time.
Have our kids huddled.
The truth is it's safer now than it's ever been. No, of course, you could also say that's because people are more protective than they were in the 70s. I I'm a father of three and I'm not concerned about kidnapping. But
you live in the middle of nowhere.
But and your children are ugly.
Yeah. Let's be honest. Your house has, you have to walk a little ways to get to the border of the property.
You have to get through the weapons and such too. No. I'm not scared of it, but I definitely want to be a responsible parent, right? And the boundary of being the responsible parent, like weighing that idea of the fingerprint and potentially it could be helped, I could definitely see that. Especially if I knew a family who had lost their daughter or son, from a kidnapping, even a rare case as it is. If I was emotionally drawn by that, I would definitely be more, okay, we got to do everything. I got to take photographs of the kids every time. I could take fingerprints. Like it would make sense because all of a sudden it would touch me and I'm an emotional person.
Those are the times where I think of hysteria and go, oh, God, and... Like I want to do these things and then go, wait a second, but I know that the data doesn't support that.
Good thing partner is also a scientific kind of person as well. You guys probably align with this.
We're still human.
That's what I was kind of saying.
Beings make decisions based upon patterns.
Yeah.
And patterns are generally the force behind an emotional response or preconceived notions. And we're no different than that. We do our own... lack of a better term, stupid things.
Can I suggest something? If you're curious about playing with this area of copyright and such, or of ownership of rights and stuff, what you could do right now is do a photo series of the data that represents the biometrics of your daughter and self-publish that, and then that is copyrighted. And then you can sign over that copyright to her when she's 18, and then she can own the copyright on it. And if anybody ever tries to have the fingerprint data, you can be like, no, that's copyrighted material. You're infringing. Because there is legality around that. I remember,
this sounds to me very, no offense.
Paranoia?
This sounds, no, actually I was thinking naive. Sounds very much like the argument that has been given to me by technocrats in the past saying like, yes, I just encrypted this stuff with my hard drive with 4,096-bit public key, private key pair. I am all set. There is no possible way for the entire length of
the
life of the universe that anyone would be ever able to break into this, at which point real life enters and the government organization that actually wants this data goes, hey, can you go to the hardware store and buy that $5 wrench? Let's get the password.
You mean that torture? Yeah.
Right. It's that whole thing behind – well, I'm going to copyright it, and that will make it safe from any official intrusion.
You could sue later. I mean, that's all it would really mean. You had some legal, you know. So we had
sometimes the only safest way to do it is not make it in the first place. Like, if I were really concerned about,
you just burn her fingerprints off right now. Make sure she never leaves the house. There's no pictures of.
Yeah, it's you know, pierce her ears. You know, get her vaccines.
Remove her fingerprints.
Acid to her fingerprint, to her fingertips, so that there are no fingerprints.
Solder contact lenses that have no retina pattern. You know, that kind of thing.
Inject the retrovirus that changes her genetic signature.
Oh, just enough.
Yeah.
Geekspeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and his user permission. And Geekspeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. Use our stuff any way you'd like it. Just let them know the geeks said hi. Our intern is Chandler, and thank you so much, Chandler. And our patrons, I appreciate your generosity of supporting the program very much. Also, I want to thank our support geek, Greg Merkley, who provided this week's working title, To the Moon Pokemon? Did we cover the moon earlier? Oh, yeah, we did. All right, I like it. Theme song by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music, and thank you for being here for episode 28 of our 16th season. Miles, thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
All right, Miles and I have finished the radio show, the podcast, and now we're going to talk about gun control, GMOs, Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, and if you're interested in that topic, please feel free to stay with us, but I urge you to let that show be what it was and to say goodbye to this episode.
Because now we're being completely self-indulgent.
You got anything you want to wrap up with the post show?
Anything? Well, there's some things that I just thought were kind of like, what is going on? I know that you wanted to talk about crime.
Well, we talked about the of the day shooting, and you know, we talked about that in the beginning of the show, which I didn't know we were going to do during the main part of the show. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought of that as a post, but it definitely wrapped into technology in general.
By the way, those recent shootings were something like the 529th
this year.
This year, person of color shot by the police. Now,
the reason why they hit press is because there's video.
Well, there's also, I mean, there's a lot of nuance. That isn't to say that every one of those shootings was unjustified or like placing any value judgments.
Yeah.
It is talking about, well, wait a second. That's 500 plus so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
How many are other countries doing per capita?
Right.
You know, for the same, like, how many police
officers have been shot this year? Like, there's a lot of ways to think about it as well. We might just
have
a much
more violent
society.
Officers that have died in the line of duty has steadily been going down year after year.
But, okay, did you have a conclusion to that? I have a question.
No, go for it.
My question is this. You all have a lot of friends on Facebook, right? Like, if you're participating in Facebook, even if you've deleted the app from your phone, if you participate in Facebook, you have people you know and have known for a long time, potentially have caring, you know, emotion for and all that, mm-hmm. who sometimes will post things that you're a little bit like, ugh, how much do you want to argue with it? How much do you want to judge it and all that? And I had a post from someone who I respect quite a bit. He's a long-term friend of mine. He's a teacher, and I just think he's an amazingly great guy. But the video he posted, or the collection of things he posted, was, you know, in this last week where we've seen, you know, mm-hmm. horrible things happening all sides, right? The assassination of police officers, also shocking and horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of that, he posted a, keep in mind that police officers' job is extremely hard. And it was just a video collection of officers on video being surprised, a gun pulled on them, or them being shot, sometimes killed, by someone they were pulling over, or, you know, some kind of like that.
Uh-huh.
It was just shot after shot after shot of that. And the question, of course, in the video headline was, can you tell when it's appropriate to pull your gun? Which, of course, yeah, it's an extremely difficult job. Like, absolutely. My first take on it was, like, it seems to me like a response like All Lives Matter, where it's completely missing the point of the injustice and the problem.
Right.
Right? And that was my take on it. Are you in alignment with that? What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree with regard to, there are a lot of folks that brought up Blue Lives Matter. And talking about police, mm-hmm. you know, lives matter. And
I got the reference, yeah.
Not everyone may have.
Yeah, sure.
And at the same time, the same people that say, when someone says Black Lives Matter and respond All Lives Matter, and then later on say Blue Lives Matter, when they say Blue Lives Matter, they aren't saying if you're not a cop, you don't matter.
Right. No, I know.
But suddenly Black Lives Matter is something
piece.
That doesn't – yeah, means only
well,
Black Lives Matter
well,
the
other
and the police
of that
lives
is
don't.
That there's no place in a society where we're allowing and accepting the death of police officers. That's not – I mean, we understand they're doing a job and it's a risky job. But never is there a situation where the community is like ignoring that death of a police officer. So when you do that, you're kind of saying – you're kind of lessening the actual problem we have in our society of people of color being killed.
I honestly believe there's something more pernicious going on because there are a lot of folks that I see passing around stuff on my Facebook feed talking about how, for example, Black Lives Matter activists were assaulting police officers. You know, things like that, or some, and when you look back at the data, they're really people who are associated with the Black Lives Matter movement, or at least who were leaders, people that other people look up to, have never called for violence toward police officers. Have always denigrated it. Have always, and a lot of times when police officers died, it has nothing to do with someone who's from the Black Lives Matter movement. In fact, the people most likely to shoot police officers are young white men. But at the same time, there is this narrative that Black Lives Matters is somehow a rallying cry to shoot or injure or otherwise denigrate police officers. And
oh wow, that's what you hear when someone says Blue Lives Matter?
No, that's what I'm seeing. People have been very explicit about that. It's not about me perceiving something by connecting dots. I mean, people have said explicitly that Black Lives Matter
is – the response to someone taking the Black Lives Matter completely in the correct direction is then going and shooting people, which is –
No, I mean someone who – the type of person that on my feed who has also put in Blue Lives Matter has also been the person whose news feeds and the news gathering outlets and their communities – are ones that foster the notion that Black Lives Matters is a group that promotes violence against the police. Which is not borne out by the facts.
Anything, right. Here's a great little very short summary. It's a photograph that just kind of says it clearly in my mind what – because I think that sometimes people do not see the – I mean just like it's very hard to see your own – what is it when you have because I'm a white male, I have – what is it?
Oh, you're talking about privilege?
Privilege, yeah. Okay. It's very hard to see your own privilege. Like you're not aware of it and
sure.
You have to actually be – you have to train yourself to be more aware of it. So there's this picture that says, yes, all lives matter. But when you're focused on the black ones right now – let's see. Oh, but we're focused on the black ones right now, black lives, because it isn't very apparent that our judicial system doesn't know that. Doesn't know that Black Lives Matter, and if you, of course, are if you're trying to fight the direction, if you're trying to say every life matters, you're actually missing the point of what actually needs to change. You're not helping the change, and therefore you're part of the problem. By the way, there's this great collection of a GitHub post again, open source project started by the Washington Post. That's their repo, and they're taking on submissions to document all police officers.
Right.
Shot in the line of duty, or a database of every fatal shooting in the United States by a police officer, in the line of duty, 2015 and 2016, and they're taking open submissions. And of course, it's difficult to get this because jurisdictions do not share this data. In fact, they don't actually even publish their own findings of this situation. Mm-hmm. And so this has to be an open source project or people from individuals. And I'm sure that people are citing news stories and citing, you know, locations. If you know of this and you have some information about a shooting by a police officer that resulted in a fatality in 2015, 2016, you can participate in this online resource. And 619 different people have commits have happened. It's only two contributors, so basically they're actually the ones doing it. But right now, 1,505 people have been shot or killed by police officers since January 1st, 2015 in the United States that they know of.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting way of doing open source projects.
Just adding in a little bit of like geekery, I guess, to
the
conversation.
I tried with that too, yeah.
Which is that we do have a lot of polarization, obviously, with regard to gun control. You have folks saying, let's ban assault rifles.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have folks that have had experience with guns say, hold on, an assault rifle is something that is an has fully automatic
capabilities
on there. And that's not what civilians have. They have a semi-automatic where you have to pull a trigger each time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ban semi-automatics, that means basically every modern pistol, hunting rifle,
I mean,
a lot of guns.
A semi-automatic is any weapon that you can fire multiple times.
No.
Even a revolver.
Any one that you can fire multiple times by each...
By one finger action.
Yeah.
So even a lot of revolvers, even though in Westerns and stuff you have to cock it, a lot of them are auto-cocking. So that considers that as well. So, I mean, yeah, go on.
Right. And so it's untenable when people say, like, because you need to have exacting language about a problem in order to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say things like assault rifles, which doesn't actually apply to the thing, and if you start trying to identify an item by its morphology, if it has what looks like a wooden stock, so it makes it look like an AK-47, even though it's not an
right.
AK-47.
Right. Not a good way to do it, right?
An AR-15, which is not substantially different from a hunting rifle in much of its action, but it looks like an M16, military weapon with an automatic setting. That then gets conflated with the issue of we now have 3D printers that can print guns.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 3D printed gun was a few years ago, and we reported on that.
And it was a novelty, and it was interesting. It mm-hmm. was more about the discussion about what would happen.
And technology has improved, as it always does.
Mm-hmm.
And there is someone who actually has designs for a 3D printed replica of an AR-15. And it
AR-15, of course, is a semi-automatic rifle that can be switched to a fully automatic.
No. The civilian models cannot be switch to a fully automatic, any
if you're
more so
3D printing it, yeah, you can.
Yes, but
I mean,
when you talk about an AR-15, if you're talking about something that you're making out of whole cloth, then yes, I'm sure it's quite possible that people would be able to download and print an M16 rather
right,
than an AR-15.
Which is the difference. But keep in mind, the difference between a semi-automatic and an automatic weapon, the only thing different is that it catches before it fires again.
Right.
You're really talking about shaving off a catch. In most situations, it's not if you're making guns in any way, it's not hard to do this. But most people don't make guns, except that now it's getting easier for anybody
right.
to make
and
a gun.
And then there's a conversation there. About do you say like you can't have 30 bullet magazines, 30 bullet capacity magazines.
But printing a 3D magazine that holds 50 rounds is trivial.
Well, you have to put the spring in. That's a whole different.
The hardware store has springs, so you're going to have to outlaw springs. I mean, it is not going to get easier from here on out to control weapons.
Right.
And are you saying that you might as well make weapons all legal? I mean, it doesn't matter.
I was thinking along the lines of we need to be more careful what this conversation is about. And we also need to stop being so flippant on all sides about the issue, especially because one of the stories that I was reading about as research for the show was a gentleman who has an iPhone case that's – when you have the iPhone in your back pocket, what sticks out of the top looks like the handle of a gun.
Wait, how does an iPhone look like a gun?
No, I'm talking about the portion. The case is made in such a way that when the phone
like a gun.
It looks like a gun in your back pocket.
Yeah,
it looks like your gun. Looks like a gun in the back pocket.
I don't recommend that you wear that, Miles.
But I'm sorry that you can't see this
we'll
from there,
the
but we'll
put
the link up there. But
no, that's not a good case to have.
Yes, it looks very much like you have a sidearm in your back pocket.
Mm-hmm. Why would you do that?
This was in the UK, by the way.
Okay.
This is this flippancy that I was talking about. On the one hand, you say, let's ban guns without thinking about the practicalities of doing so
mm-hmm.
to actually solve any of the issues involved. I mean, leaving alone the side of the weapons that people refer to as assault weapons being responsible for very small, vanishingly small amount of firearm deaths. even though they are involved with many of the massacres. Right. They come up in the news because of the massacres. And those massacres don't really happen anywhere else in the Western world. But there is also that flippancy, which in no small part, I believe, comes from privilege. Like, black folks in general, especially in the U.S., I don't see putting a iPhone gun case in your back pocket as you walk around everyday life.
Right.
It's easy enough to get shot otherwise. why add to the possibility?
Yeah, but I mean, even as a white privileged guy in the United States, I'm not going to carry a weapon in my – I mean, I'm not going to carry something that looks like a weapon in my pocket.
Well,
people uncomfortable.
But I mean, this is a country where you have people walking around with AR-15s through Target.
Right.
Like, this is not – that's what I talk about being flippant. Like, it's not a rational discussion at that point.
Okay. Getting back to printed guns and the like, and actually having weapons that are pretty severe be a more prominent thing in our society without controls, that is not even the problem, because we don't have gun controls really in the United States. Like, you can go to a gun show and buy an AR-15, right?
That's an oversimplification of it.
Do you think we're going to change the laws to actually make it? Do you think we're going to change this pattern we currently have?
I personally, I don't know what's going to happen. I do have some hopes, and I think that a wonderful way of reducing gun violence, and this is absolutely not geeky or tech related in any way.
I think we lost that. Yeah, we stopped doing that a while ago.
Is you start actually dealing with domestic violence and putting in actual safeguards for families. Because that's where a lot of gun deaths come from, is domestic violence or suicides. So mental health issues become a major issue, so that people can get help and you can destigmatize that. I think if you addressed those items, so mental health and actually putting the law on predominantly women's side, I mean, just like not putting them at a disadvantage and waiting until there is a violent altercation before having a weight of law step in, would reduce gun deaths immeasurably in this country. I think that it is unconscionable that we have four-year-olds who shoot people.
Right. Who find guns.
Yeah.
Or shoot themselves.
Yes.
Okay, let me ask you something, because I always have two hats when I do the interview and the show, right? Mm-hmm. One is to talk about interesting things with you, and I find this conversation great and interesting, and I'd actually like continue into other topics in the same realm. And I'm wondering how much of our audience would be disinterested in talking about the stuff we've just been talking about, or you know, it's outside the realm of what we normally discuss to some degree. Though I think if you listen to us through the years, the same tenor is there. What do you think about that?
Well,
I'm going to speak for myself.
I don't generally want to do this on Geek Speak.
Right.
This was
it's not the right forum necessarily for it.
Right, and I don't know that we are the best ones to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I can talk about my fears as a person of color to the events that have been going on and my personal take on that.
And this is one of the reasons why earlier before the show I said we could talk about the political event of the day and the shootings we're seeing and the imbalance and the injustice of society. And part of that is my greedy nature to hold on to your perspective and to understand it and to kind of take it on as an ownership, because of course I don't know what it's like to be a black man in the United States. Like, I do not get that.
And
I have a completely different emotional effect when I hear these stories. I'm sad and shocked, but I'm not fearful.
But after talking with me, you don't know the perspective of black men in general. I know about you, a privileged black man.
I happen to know.
Yeah. And I am. Just as I am. I very much have male privilege with regard to...
Much more than most women.
But I mean, for example, you know, walking down the street, there are a lot of situations that as a 180, on a good day, a 6 foot man that I don't worry about. Like, I don't have to worry about it. It doesn't enter my mind to think about it because walking down the street, like it.
Let me ask you something.
The target.
If you're walking on down the street, and the same, and you kind of want to cross the street, but you're not necessarily going to cross the street now, but some point soon. On the same side of the street you are, two blocks away, is a woman walking towards you. What do you do? Do you take any action? You just walk past her? Because I actually have started to cross the street prior to getting to me.
I've had some times where I have crossed the street.
Just because I want to show that I'm not a threat. And I know that that's not like everybody feels threatened by men, but I don't – I want to try to help.
Well, when you don't have a prior relationship with that person, when you are just a stranger and you're going about your day and there is no greater context to it, you're not like at a pride parade together.
Mm-hmm.
You're not
– Right. Yeah, we just happen to be two strangers passing.
Right. And especially if you are the only people on that street, a lot of times your only potential as a male is as a potential threat.
Right.
And it's really sad that it's like that, but you got to call a spade sometimes.
So would you do the same thing? Would you cross the street?
I have.
Yeah.
I don't always. It's situational.
But here's the messed up thing. Though I am a man and I'm a threat potentially to anybody, as humans are, we're, you know, top of the food chain on the planet at this point. If a black man's walking down the street two blocks from me and I'm on the same side of the street, I'm going to stay on the same side of the street. Because I don't want to do the opposite thing of showing that I'm scared of him or that there's fear, right? Because I want to kind of embrace him as a human being. So it's I just find that dichotomy is a little odd to me. And I guess that's just the representation of the society we're in.
It is. And making conscious decisions is and evaluating our choices is probably one of the most important things, even more so than the end choice that we make sometimes. The fact that you are thinking about it rather than like, oh, great, now you're invading my personal space when I'm trying to walk down the street.
I get that, but I don't think that me thinking about it, that kind of stuff really matters that much.
On the contrary, the folks that say, whatever, I'm just living my life. I'm just doing what I'm going to do.
I'm not a threat to that woman. I'd never do anything
bad. Other people, I'm not going to do anything. And if other people have a problem with me, like they need to deal with it, I'm not doing anything. That's the person that I worry about. Not the person who is overanalyzing, but the person who throws up their hands and says, I know I'm not going to hurt anyone. So what does it matter what anyone else's perception is? Despite the fact that no one knows what's going on in your head. You know,
I didn't want to go into this conversation of GMO because it's a long conversation of GMO, but now we're talking. Just stop listening to the podcast at this point if this is not interesting to you.
I'm wondering
over.
About stopping listening. You're going to talk about GMOs now?
I want to bring it up for one point. I was with – there's a prevalent movement in California that I see, especially in Santa Cruz area where I live, where people are anti-GMO.
Yes.
And that means genetically modified food. Or genetically modified foods.
Genetically
and
modified organisms.
Organisms, right. Yeah. But the general concept is people who don't want GMO things. I know and you know that we've been altering crops for eons by manipulating their reproductive systems. That's how we get the grains mm-hmm. we have at this time. And they have been changed. And one of the things you can say about them is
at
that
– at random.
Yeah.
Or selective breeding, but yeah.
Right. But one of the things you can say about what we've been doing is creating stuff that theoretically is more useful to us. That's the best thing you can say. And those things could reproduce on their own. Like that's pretty much what you could say about what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all over the gambit. And sometimes we succeed, sometimes we don't. And we get weeds and we have invasive species afterwards. And there's tons of problems with that. From my – and I want to say ignorant because after speaking to my family about this, I finally kind of spoke up about it. They schooled me on something. I learned something very interesting. But my take on it was it's not GMO that's the problem. It's the way GMOs are used, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was debating like, no, it's about these large corporations that own patents on things and these monoculture systems that exist where we have one type of grain that covers an entire state and how dangerous that is. But as I started talking about it, I kept on trying to think of ways to rephrase it to explain my situation, and it kept on coming back down to a very simple translation, which I will go ahead and translate for you now, which is it's not people, it's not guns that kill people, it's people that kill people, right? Even though I know from the scientific method of genetically modifying things is not the guilty party, that's one of the issues, one of the red hair, the flags you can look at in the system in place is that the things that are being altered by genetic manipulation is kind of a flag waving in a problem that we have. Does that make sense to you?
Your argument makes sense. I don't know that I'm completely on board with it. I totally agree with you. Like, yeah, genetic manipulation, we are using different tools, but it's still the same type of thing we've been doing for
that was my take. That was what I was arguing. Yeah, yeah. There's a difference, of course, but it's
monoculture
subtle.
Is definitely an issue. I'm totally on board with you, but it was an issue long before genetically modified organisms.
Right.
Or rather, before the modern concept of, you know, gene splicing.
And the targeting out of gene manipulation as being evil, to me, just goes against the trope that scientists are scary. Like, and I don't like that. I don't like that that idea.
Yeah. I don't, you know, GMOs, I don't see as, if you got rid of, if you like banned all GMOs, like you went even further than what they were talking about with labeling, which is really just a lot of people talking about, like, I don't want GMOs at all, but they are settling for labeling so they can say, I don't want to get that. I want to get the other thing that
consumer choice. It's hard to argue against. Yeah.
Monoculture still becomes a very big issue.
Yeah.
And
probably more of an issue than genetically modifying things in my mind.
Yes.
But
I would agree with you.
But wouldn't you also say that if you look at the companies that are participating in monoculture, they're also the one that owns a lot of the patents on genetically altered food. And part of the issues of monoculture and patent control on food is that you have these mega corporations that will basically are destroying the monoculture, you know, is kind of spreading and destroying other crops. So you have, or infesting, if you will, if you want to think about
that,
it.
There was a case with regard to patenting a guy. He was
grabbed some seeds and they got, yeah.
Right, saving seed, and that was a problem. That, if you look into the case, has a lot more nuance than what is presented in the popular
I guess my point is that the monoculture industry of large corporations owning lots of farm, you know, food production, and they patent things and spread it, all that's also very much in line with GMO at this point, because those are the corporations that are investing in genetically modified stuff. So
they're investing everything. The thing is, those large companies are also investing in the organic movement, because organic doesn't mean anything.
Well, that was the other aspect of the argument. I didn't even conclude on that one. I basically argued about both these things with a whole group of loved ones, and I looked like a complete jerk.
So what we're talking about is unchecked power, especially when they have a large amount of money and lobbying ability within the government, is a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless of what wares they are peddling.
Yeah. Sorry, I went down this track. When I was talking with it and kind of getting this idea that I felt like I kept on phrasing something that was very much like this stupid idea that the argument we should just allow guns because people kill people, not guns, right? That argument is really ridiculous when it comes to how to solve gun violence in the United States.
And,
like, that's just a not
and
useful
right off the bat,
argument.
It's just a dumb argument. Guns don't kill people, people kill people. Then why do they give guns to soldiers when they go to war?
Right.
It's
because a tool
guns,
of killing.
Yeah.
That's what it's for. And so I just kept on feeling like I was saying that when I was saying, no, GMO is not bad. The methodology of modifying organisms is very similar to what the other had. But if you want to but at the same time, the people that are using that technology are doing things that are a little inappropriate for, like, something I don't believe in exactly. It's hard to then separate them, right?
Yeah.
It is a tool.
And if you want to make a Second Amendment argument, that's a whole other ball of wax. And that's
well,
fine.
I think we wrap this one up, don't you think?
Actually, I had something I wanted to talk about with regard
no
to that was tech-based.
No one's listening at this point, but go ahead.
Okay. Which was Twinkies.
Is this about the guy's diet?
No.
Oh, you hear about the diet? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
So Twinkies, they're back in it. Twinkies were going to be canceled. Remember that?
No, but okay, I believe
it was a whole big thing. And people were like, oh no, what's going to happen to my Twinkies? Well, Twinkies is back, and they've had a $2 billion gain since the problem. And here's the part that I bring in the tech angle. It used to be that Twinkies, so 1 million Twinkies a day,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was a you know, most of Hostess's, the company Hostess, their total output, and it required 14 plants and 9,000 employees to make.
14 plants and 9,000 employees made the Twinkies. Okay.
Yes, to make all those Twinkies. Now, it's 500 people in this one plant.
It's just one plant? So they've automated it to the wazoo.
Yes. And they've basically by
but they're not
cutting,
the Haydai state still. Are we more tweaking
by cutting 94% of their staff of that workforce to make the Twinkies.
I bet they're cheaper now too.
That's where they're able to make the money, and that's where they're able to go forward. And it would just seem to me it's like such a microcosm of like we must have Twinkies. Like people were genuinely upset that Twinkies were going away. My first thought, honestly, was, well, what are they going to do about the deep fried Twinkies at the boardwalk? The Santa Cruz Beach boardwalk nearby us. But it wasn't – I was like, oh, well, it's an icon. Like,
right.
Oh, well, okay.
But they're going to keep them because they've automated.
But they're going to keep them because now they're popular again. People were upset that they're going away. Now there's a resurgence in interest in them.
Right.
And they've automated away all of the costs, which meaning people.
Yeah, kind
of. And
creepy.
This is a common theme now. Like when I think of Uber – and people were being displaced, like taxi drivers were being displaced because Uber was coming in. And then Uber was talking about, hey, let's go move to self-driving cars. Okay, so then what happens to that workforce that was making the equivalent of about 10 bucks an hour, by the way, an Uber driver on average.
Really, that's it?
Yeah. And then I'm thinking about all the other things that – because I have some techie friends – some of them
you
that
do?
Are very libertarian based, where I butt heads with them quite often because a lot of times they tend to be very dismissive of like, you want a $15 minimum wage? Like, where is that money going to come from? Well, fine, that's just going to speed up automation and those people won't have any jobs at all. And there's such a lack of any kind of sympathy, let alone empathy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's about moving authority from your own human decision into some other responsibility. Like you go, well, the free market's the free market and it's perfect and wonderful. And so the response to that is, well, yeah, $10 an hour, fine. Don't raise the rate. The system will take care of itself. Instead of thinking as a human being, you just rely some trust on some other system.
Well,
that you,
it also that you raises a question in my mind of, okay, you have what is referred to as, anyway, the developed world. It used to be first world, third world, and then it changed to developed world, developing world, and anyway. But let's – just using those terms for now, the developed world, people were talking about and fearing like they're losing their jobs, losing their jobs to places like China and India, the developing world, or Bangladesh or the like. And – or they're talking about – the so-called illegal immigrants coming over and taking the jobs that in general Americans don't want, and they're blaming the immigrants rather than the people who are hiring them, but that's a whole other conversation. That was shifting it over to say we don't like those other people because they're taking our jobs. You know, it's a certain presidential candidate is forming his platform on that notion, or actually an entire party is. And – so what happens when you go a little bit further that robots are cheaper than any human being ever will? They can work longer hours and
– faster and more reliable.
Yes. What happens to the world without any changes? What happens to it where you're not competing with someone on the other side of the planet? You're just not competing with humanity anymore.
Right.
And what happens to the developing world where
– What clearly happens, Miles, is we restructure society so everyone has what they need. It's utopia.
Well, they were talking about that guaranteed minimum income.
That's the way to go. I mean I can't imagine a world that's not going to be like that if we keep doing what we're doing because at some point –
You can't imagine it
unless
the world is a place that you would want to live in it.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Which is not necessarily how the world will end up.
CNN article from November 2010 by Madison Park wrote, Twinkie diet helps nutrition professor lose 27 pounds. This was a Mark Hobb, a professor of human nutrition in Kansas State University, for 10 weeks ate one Twinkie, actually Nutty Bar, powder donut, or Twinkie, one of those, every 3 hours regularly. And lost 27 pounds. Basically, his point was you can lose weight by just reducing your calorie intake. And he just took his calorie intake and made it less for what his body needs, and he lost weight and ate just Twinkies and crap. Which, of course, you can do if you don't eat a lot of them. problem is when I have a Twinkie, I want to eat another one. Of course, I haven't had one in
20 years. Oh, God, you actually want to keep eating them?
No, well, I don't know. I haven't eaten one in 20 years, but...
You know, they were originally filled with banana.
Really?
Yeah.
Like cream banana? Or just like a solid banana?
No, a banana that's been, you know...
Whipped? Creamed?
Yeah.
All right. You know, okay, I got to say, at this point, I need to record something that I can put right at the end of the actual show to tell people to stop listening. Because this is an extra hour of content.
Well, good.
Just you and I blabbing on. So do you want to make the warning? You give the warning to the right at the end of the show, and then before the pre-show, you go ahead and record the warning right now. Go.
Record the warning that we're out?
We out.
We out?
We're done with tech. And warn them what we're about to talk about.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Oh. But I actually wanted to talk about tech.
You know how long I'm through. I'm not putting this in the beginning, though. Aren't
so,
we done?
That's fine. Yeah, I'll make it quick. You know how athletes are talking about not going to the Olympics because of fear of the Zika virus?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Brazil.
Yes. In Brazil. Now, what happens to the tech workers? All those folks who work for companies like Cisco that have to go down there and set up equipment so that you can stream, you can view the Olympics, that you can get all the stuff to be able to do those fancy overlays and Olympians
and they've
can
been
decide,
there for a while, right?
The Olympians can decide I don't want to go.
Right.
And like I'm giving up the Olympics. I understand that. I don't want to go. What happens to an employee that is of a company that is contracted by the Olympic Committee to do work in Brazil?
They go or they get fired.
Yeah. And what happens if that employee, for example, is a pregnant woman?
That's a good reason. You
know, one of the people that actually have a worry about the like the Zika
like
virus actually applies.
Yeah.
And
what happens? How is this a tech story? Oh, because she's a tech worker.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
That's just something I wanted to bring up. It's that notion of if the people aren't popular, it's that whole, if
what
you don't have
saying,
video running,
what you're saying
you don't see
is
it.
That the
you
actual don't? Olympic athletes are kind
are
of
going,
have,
I'm not
have a position
that.
Of power, kind of. They're kind of
celebrities.
Celebrities, and maybe they're, I don't know, they have some kind of better than us kind of statute, something like that.
Stature?
Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a geek story, but I appreciate it.
Really? You don't think that the tech workers, all the dependents that would have to work on the Olympics, which is
Is there a story
a
of someone
amount.
Saying I don't want to work there and keep me from traveling?
Is there a story about a particular person?
Yeah. Is this a problem?
It has been
1 hour
by
and 58 minutes.
Yeah.
1 hour and 58 minutes.
It has
miles.
Been addressed
That's
by
how long
Cisco.
It takes us to get boring. Congratulations.
Wait, we got boring way before here.
If you like what we actually talk about, congratulations. You're as crazy as us. Is that good? No?
Crazy as we are.
You know, it's been 16 years and I've never sworn on the show and I almost swore right there. All right, see you next week.
Yep.